When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And welcome back to the X Zone, everyone. I am Rob McConnell, and for the next 4 hours, I'm your host and your guide as together we cross the time-space continuum to this place that I call the X Zone. It's a place where people dare to believe and dare to be heard. It's a place where fact is fiction and fiction is reality. And the X Zone comes to you Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. Eastern until 2 a.m. Eastern right here on the X Zone Broadcast Network, Talkstar Radio Network, Mutual Broadcast Network, iHeartRadio, Simul Radio, and Simul TV. If you'd like to see the broadcast schedule that we have for you 24/7, 365 on the X Zone Broadcast Network, visit www.xzbn.net. And for the X Zone TV channel, which is channel number 21 on Simul TV, www.simultv.com. Exonation, my guest this hour is Mark Carlotto. He is an aerospace engineer with over 30 years of experience in satellite imaging, remote sensing, signal and image processing, pattern recognition, and app development. Mark received his PhD in electrical engineering from Carnegie Mellon University in 1989. It has been published over 100 technical articles and written 6 books. Now, in his latest book, In Before Atlantis, Mark draws from his unique background and experience to propose new answers to the basic questions concerning human origins, ancient technology, and archaeological enigmas. His website is beforeatlantis.com. And Mark, welcome back to the X Zone. It has been way too long.
Hello, Rob. Thanks for having me.
A lot of people, and I'd like to ask you this, it's totally off base of what we were going to talk about tonight and what we are going to talk about tonight, there seems to be a renewed interest in the hollow earth theory. And as somebody who works in the aerospace industry, engineering, talking about imaging, remote sensing, and so on, what is your take on the hollow earth theory or the hollow earth project or whatever, however you want to call it?
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, I've heard of it, but, honestly, it's actually almost sort of in contrast to what we'll be talking about tonight, because in a sense, what, we're talking about tonight is the idea of a pole shift of the surface of the Earth, the crust sliding over the mantle. And so it's got to slide over something, substantial and molten and hot. So I don't know where the hollow earth would fit into that.
Well, why I asked you, Mark, because I did go over the information that we're going to be talking about tonight. And a number of the proponents claim that there is a hole in the North Pole and a hole at the South Pole that allows, in Antarctica itself, that allows people access to the inner earth. And I thought maybe you might have a theory on that, but I respect your honesty.
Well, I try to stick to what I know.
Sure. And I appreciate that. I really do. You were involved in the Mars investigation going back into the 1980s, 1990s. What have you been doing since then, Mark?
I did that for about 20 years, and I kind of burned out. I felt there wasn't much more to do, and it actually, as that was winding down, I moved to a place called Gloucester, Massachusetts, and I got involved in some projects related to local history and archaeology. And so I kind of got out from behind a computer and got, you know, got my hiking boots on and spent a lot of time in the woods exploring, and been doing that for about 10, 15 years or so.
Well, it's nice having you back. And how did you get involved with your new project and book, Before Atlantis?
Well, it was total serendipity. I was on Google Earth looking at some archaeological sites in Mexico that I wanted to visit. We're going to a wedding there, and I thought I'd take a trip off, you know, escape for a day or two and visit some of these sites. And so I'm looking at these sites, and you know, Google Earth is an incredible tool, and have it back in the days of the Mars investigation. We did all the, you know, mapping and all the geographical coordinates. So that was all done by hand, but now you can do incredible things. And you know, I noticed that some of these sites were not aligned to north. And you know, I remembered back in the Mars investigation days that I was looking at some structures on Mars that were not aligned to north. And the theory, a fellow, a colleague by the name of Tom Van Flandert, had suggested the idea that perhaps on Mars these structures were once aligned to the North Pole, but then the pole had shifted, and so are now rotated. And so, you know, my mind back then was on Mars, but you know, we were looking at terrestrial comparisons, terrestrial analogs, and I remember looking at Teotihuacan in Mexico, and noticing it was misaligned. So, you know, fast forward now, you know, this past year, looking at the same images, but now on Google Earth, and realizing, wow, these are misaligned. So, yeah, one thing led to another. I remembered Hapgood's theory of pole shifts, and actually some work done by some Canadians by the name of Rose and Rand Flem-Ath. You probably had them on your show.
Many years ago.
Yeah, and they wrote a book called When the Sky Fell, and it was a theory is that Antarctica was Atlantis, that landmass was at a much more temperate climate or latitude and a more temperate climate. And when the pole shifted, they believed that this happened 12 to 18,000 years ago, that it slid down to the South Pole, and that civilization was flash frozen, and it's buried under all the ice down there. Anyway, so all of these things are connected. So all this is going through my mind, and I realized, wow, you know, here's a site that I never really looked at to determine, did this actually, in fact, line up to one of these old poles? And then I found other sites that were misaligned. And over the period of a few weeks, I analyzed hundreds of sites and discovered that magically, or for some reason, they all seemed to line up to four previous locations of the North Pole. So it was sort of, you know, that eureka moment.
Yeah. One of the most talked about ancient locations where people still say that is still totally aligned is the Great Pyramid in Egypt. Has that also shifted, or is it still where it was many years ago, perfectly aligned with Sirius?
Well, you know, some say that it's changing position ever so slightly. There's a really interesting theory. I'm sure you're familiar with it, which is the Giza Orion Correlation Theory, which is that the pattern of the three pyramids in Giza match the three stars in Orion's belt.
Right.
And there's also a larger context involving the Nile and the Milky Way and Sirius and so forth. And that all these patterns on the ground mirror those in the sky about 10,500 years ago. And so this date is after this last pole shift. So the last pole shift. And what Charles Hapgood had discovered, and we can get maybe into this a little bit later.
Sure.
But not to get too far into it right now, but he discovered that there were several positions of the pole that could explain climate change, and that a previous position of the pole in Hudson Bay, north of you, could have been the cause of the Wisconsin glaciation when this giant ice sheet covered Canada and North America back prior to 12,000 years ago or so. And so when the pole shifted from Hudson Bay to the current North Pole, the glaciers moved north and so forth. And so the pyramids in Egypt are aligned to the cardinal directions to current north now. So this, by the theory that I'm proposing, these were built after the last pole shift. But something built before the pole shift, say Teotihuacan, that was aligned to a pole in Hudson Bay. So when that was built, that was pointed north, say 20,000 to 50,000 years ago. And then when the pole shifted back 10 to 18,000 years ago, that shifted position in latitude and also rotated. Because when the pole shift, it's kind of like the crust moves over the mantle of the Earth. It's kind of like a wheel. And so some points shift laterally. Others, you know, if you're at the axle of that rotation, they just kind of rotate. But, you know, Teotihuacan both shifted and rotated. So after that happened, sometime after that, the Egyptians, by this theory, you know, that I'm proposing, they built the structures in Egypt, and so they are aligned and have, you know, remained aligned.
All right, Mark, we've got to take a break. Please stand by. Explanation. Dr. Mark Carlotto is our special guest this hour. www.beforeatlantis.com. We'll be back on the other side of this break as we continue here in the X Zone from our broadcast center and studios in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. I'm Rob McConnell. Don't go away.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
ExoNation, Dr. Mark Carlotto is our special guest this hour. He is the author of Before Atlantis, and his website is beforeatlantis.com. Now, Mark, when we're talking about a polar shift, does this polar shift also affect the electromagnetic field?
Yeah, in a sense, it does. You know, currently, the with the Earth aligned as it is, the magnetic pole does move slowly. That's the reason why a compass doesn't face geographic north, but it, you know, the magnetic declination, when you read a compass, has to be taken into account so you can determine true north from the magnetic reading. And this changes over time. And the idea is that when the geographic pole shifts, everything shifts with that. And this is actually relevant because of some work that was done in the 90s where they actually discovered back 500 million years ago that there was an enormous pole shift on the Earth. And that's based on these so-called paleopoles, which are magnetic poles. So the two are kind of linked together.
Now, the pole shifts that you're talking about, how grave will they be? How significant will they be?
So the pole shift that's pretty well documented and accepted by mainstream scientists and geologists was a rotation of about 90 degrees of the planet.
Wow.
So, you know, so the Earth turning, you know, a quarter of the way around. These pole shifts are that Hapgood detailed are smaller, roughly half or a third of that. And they're movements of the pole from its current position to places like the Bering Sea, north of the Aleutian Islands, or to northern Greenland, or the Norway Sea, or Hudson Bay. So it's not a significant deviation. But the one possibility is that these pole shifts were not gradual, but were sudden shifts, and the ensuing shock was the mechanism behind, you know, the catastrophes and the destruction and the floods that are talked about, you know, by Plato and Atlantis,
right,
and, you know, worldwide myths.
How realistic that Atlantis really is Antarctica and in the far south?
I don't, you know, it's possible that there is something under the South Pole in Antarctica. It's likely, if that was a temperate landmass, that there is something to be found there. Someone when I was working on the book, telling him what I was doing, I told him the title. They said, you know, you got to ditch the title because that's going to get you into trouble. And I says, well, not really, because, you know, I'm not looking for Atlantis per se, but what is talked about in the book and what I discovered was a much broader context. There might have been a place called Atlantis, and it could have been at the South Pole.
Right.
It could have also been in the Yucatan. Mm-hmm. That's actually what I'm leaning more towards based on the data in the book. But the point in the book is that it was a worldwide civilization that existed for hundreds of thousands of years. And Atlantis was a part of that.
So where in history did we go wrong, where we basically restarted our civilization and our societies?
Well, I mean, in a sense, we're always going wrong. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's human nature. We tend to forget. We want to forget. We tend to marginalize, as particularly things that we don't understand or that are threatening. And, you know, Graham Hancock talks about this amnesia that our civilization has. I think it's human nature. Mm-hmm. And I think, I think it's probably been going on as long as humans or Neanderthals or Denisovans have been in existence. It's probably a trait that we all these species have. And it leads to forgetting our past and then, you know, trying to rediscover it. And that's what this is all about.
What are the results of your new dating? For example, how old, say, is Machu Picchu?
So Machu Picchu would have been aligned to the pole in the Bering Sea, and that could be 80,000 years old or older. That's the oldest. Sites in Peru's Sacred Valley would be among the oldest. But there's also other sites in Europe and Northern Africa that are equally old, because they too point to that ancient pole.
Are we talking about the Acropolis?
So the Acropolis would have, the Acropolis actually is aligned to the Greenland pole.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have been more like 50,000 years ago. That, of course, you know, raises the question, or, you know, some people would say, well, you know, are you saying that the Acropolis itself is 50,000 years old? The basic idea that I'm proposing is that the original site was established at that time, and that over time, it was expanded, rebuilt, keeping that orientation. So perhaps the Acropolis, you know, that structure is 50,000 years old, but the Parthenon is more recent. Actually, it was built on an earlier Parthenon. So there's, you know, there's many cases, and I talk about this in the book, of these structures built on top of older structures. Temple of Jupiter at Baalbek in Lebanon is another example. So these exist throughout the world.
How did the ancients know so much without the technology that we have today?
I mean, who knows what they knew?
Exactly. Like, how did they know how to align themselves with the poles at the time?
Well, aligning something to north, all that takes is patience and accurate measurements. You know, by measuring, putting a stick in the ground and measuring the position of the sun, and there's, you know, methods of intersecting circles, you can get pretty good accuracy. That's how they think the Egyptians did it to the current pole. An assumption is that humans haven't changed, that, you know, that our hunter-gatherer forefathers were no less intelligent. They didn't have the technology we had, but they were equally intelligent, and they could figure a lot of this stuff out.
Speaking about Egypt, what does your theory tell us about the Sphinx, for example?
Well, the Sphinx is part of the same complex, and back during the Mars, days of the Mars investigation, I spent a little bit of time with Robert Bobal and Robert Schock and John Anthony West and Graham Hancock, and you know that was when a lot of these theories were coming out. In particular, you know, West had proposed the idea that the Sphinx was much older, and then Schock, through his analysis, determined that it likely was based on water erosion. And this, you know, this theory pushed back the age of the Sphinx from, you know, like 3100 BC to perhaps 7000 BC or earlier, which, you know, at that time, and by, you know, sort of more conventional alternative theories, if I can use that term, is considered old. This non-conventional alternative theory that I'm proposing just simply has period of time being the latest since the last pole shift, but there are other periods of time that are take you back into much more vastly ancient time frames, going back not, you know, 1,000 or 10,000 years, but to, you know, 100,000 years.
If there was a pole shift tomorrow, how would it affect us in present-day society?
Well, I actually talk about the pattern of pole shifts in the book, and it appears there's a lot more, I think, to be done with this, a lot more analysis. But when the shift occurs, there are places that that take the, you know, they bear the brunt of it. There's the most damage. That's sort of, you know, this wheel analogy where there's the greatest amount of lateral shift. There's most damage there, but other parts of the planet would be less affected. So it's sort of like patterns of destruction. So, you know, I'm not so sure that there was a worldwide flood or worldwide devastation, you know, back 12 to 18,000 years ago. I think it affected some areas more than others. So as a result of that, you know, the planet was not completely destroyed, but it just, you know, there was just more destruction in some areas than others, and some areas more disrupted than others.
Looking in the history as it is written and taught, how different is the history that you believe compared to the history that is written about?
Well, you know, that history is being rewritten now, because back, you know, back about 10 years ago, they discovered this cave in Siberia with this new humanoid species, Denisovans, and that is completely rewriting the whole book on the origin of man. And what's interesting, it's all genetically, you know, a lot of the research is genetically based, and they're able to pull out all sorts of information. And so, you know, I think where I'm going with this theory is kind of in the same direction that these new discoveries, new avenues that they're beginning to open up. So I think there's a convergence.
All right, stand by, Mark. Thanks so much for coming on the show. Very interesting topic. And Exo Nation, if you'd like to find out more about our guest this hour, Dr. Mark Carlotto, visit his website, beforeatlantis.com. And Mark and I will be back on the other side of the news as we continue here in the X-Zone from our broadcast center and studios in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. My name is Rob McConnell. Don't go away. Let's see, only 14 more days. No, not 14. Can't be 14. Craig, what is it, 20 days before Christmas? Wow, my gosh. This year has gone by so fast. ExoNation, our guest this hour is Dr. Mark Carlotto. He is an aerospace engineer with over 30 years of experience in satellite imaging, remote sensing, signal and image processing, pattern recognition, and app development. His website, beforeatlantis.com. Mark, can you tell us more about Machu Picchu? Can you break it down in terms of the alignments you have analyzed so far?
Sure. In fact, there's a lot in the book, and Machu Picchu is one of the sites covered in the book. But beforeatlantis.com has an ongoing blog where I'm posting new research results, and I just posted some new results last week concerning Machu Picchu. The original revelation with Machu Picchu was like Ollantaytambo and Sacsayhuaman and Cuzco. These are all sites that face the a pole in the Bering Sea north of the Aleutian Islands, the oldest right. pole in this chronology that Hapka developed. And the particular structure at Machu Picchu that aligns to this is called the Temple of the Three Windows. And so the idea is that when the pole was at this location, this particular structure would have been oriented north, south, east, and west, and the three windows would have looked out to the east. Right now, it doesn't. Right now, it looks out in a completely non-solar direction. And what's interesting is that that site is consists of several parts. The parts that that are thought to be the residences face mostly to the east, and are thought to have been involved in some kind of solar alignments, mm-hmm. at least solar observations. But the older structures, the Temple of the Three Windows and the Intihuatana, this is the so-called hitching post of the sun, these do not align in any way to the current sunrise directions, solstices or anything like that. But back, 80, 90,000 years ago, they would have aligned to east. And the Intihuatana is particularly interesting because it shows evidence of being modified over the course of time as the pole shifted. It turns out that Machu Picchu was in one of those places on the planet that did not suffer serious damage. There are earthquakes there for sure, right. but it wasn't devastated to the extent that other sites were. And so there's evidence in the analysis I have on the blog that suggests that the Intihuatana was modified. It was initially a solstice marker to register the summer solstice sunrise, the date of the summer solstice. But then after a pole shift occurred, that alignment didn't work anymore, right? It rotated, and so then they repurposed it as an equinox marker because what happened was at that point the Machu Picchu shifted from where it was to a place almost on the equator. And on the equator, if you have a structure that has a vertical shaft, at noon on the equinox, it casts no shadow. And so I believe this is when it became known as the hitching post of the sun, many thousands of years ago. And there's signs that as the pole shifted since then, other modifications were made to it. It's a very complicated object. It's got very strange angles. Mm-hmm. And if you analyze these relative to the pole shift directions, they seem to be correlated. So no one's, this is completely new. No one's come up with anything like this before. It's totally out of left field because that's kind of where I live.
Mind you, that is where most of the brilliant discoveries are made.
Right? Well, brilliance and insanity, right? They kind of there's a fine line between the two of them.
All right, point well taken. What do you think the main purpose for these archaeological treasures were?
These are all impressive sites.
Yes, they are. Yeah.
The oldest sites have the largest stones. the stones that we can't figure out how they were quarried, transported, shaped, fitted, erected. You know, it's not just the Sacred Valley in Peru, but the other structures, other enormous structures, are like at Baalbek. These are 1,000+ ton stones that have been quarried, partially quarried. There's indications that there's even more stones underground that are buried. These were obviously sites that had important symbolic significance, ceremonial significance. Look at the grand buildings in our civilization. You look at the obelisk, the Washington Monument. It's an important symbolic structure, subject to certainly a lot of controversy, but if there's an esoteric meaning and all that to it, but certainly symbolizes greatness and power and strength. And so, I think these sites had they were built with the same mentality. They were built by humans, and like I said, I don't think humans have changed. I think we've always been the same. Just the technology has been different.
All right, but if we're looking at these magnificent structures around the world, do we see similarities that would suggest that there was communication over the great and vast distances that these archaeological wonderments are actually found? For example, Peru, the Machu Picchu, to the Great Pyramids, to the Acropolis. There has to be something here that connected all these different locations. Any ideas on what they were, or what they are, I should say?
Well, yeah, others have noticed similarities in construction techniques, mm-hmm. in shapes of some of these monoliths, of like protruding stubs, of special cutouts for putting in metallic structures to join them together. It's not the area that I specifically pursued in before Atlantis, but mm-hmm. others have found similarities in construction techniques and materials used. They always tend to, if available, use the hardest, most durable stones. Others have found similarities based on iconography, and that's been probably subject to the greatest amount of criticism. Because it starts to become very subjective, mm-hmm. And I think what's appealing about the approach I've taken is it's totally based on geometry and math. And so I found these correlations. The correlations exist. Anyone can go to Google Earth and draw lines and show and see that these points converge to these pole locations, that these were points of alignment. The fact that they're correlated with these previously identified poles that were derived based on climate change analysis. In other words, Hapgood, believe that this pole in Alaska explained the fact that North America was cold, but Europe was warm at the time. So, I think what I'm trying to say is that the analysis that I've been pursuing is more quantitative, so it's less subjectivity. It's no less valid. I mean, these are all valid ways of analyzing the similarities. And to your point, I agree that there are many similarities between these structures, between structures across the world. Mainstream science has no answer for that, and that's why I think this is a very exciting area, because you see constantly people sharing photos and discoveries on Facebook, and it's like there's just so much excitement. It's really gratifying to be a part of it.
What do we hope to learn from your discoveries, and how will it affect us in the future?
So I think I'm hoping that someone that has the ability and the means might decide to, say, do some deep excavations,
right?
Because that's you know, if these sites, if say the Parthenon or the Acropolis is 50,000 years old, if you keep digging under, you know, you keep going down, you should find something else. There should be more stuff there. And that's the only way this hypothesis will get advanced to a theory is to actually have some independent means of verifying it. So I think, you know, excavations, this actually had started back in the early 1900s. There was a mineralogist by the name of William Niven who did a lot of research in the Valley of Mexico, and he did stratigraphic analysis of hundreds of clay pits, and he came to the conclusion that there was a broad cataclysm that occurred in Mexico tens of thousands of years ago. And this actually correlates to much of what I describe in the book, and it's in the book.
All right, Mark, I hate to do this, buddy, but we've got to take our final break for this hour.
Sure.
ExoNation, Dr. Mark Carlotto is our special guest this hour. www.beforeatlantis.com, and Mark and I will be back as we wrap up this hour here in the X Zone from our broadcast center and studios in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. I'm Rob McConnell. Don't go away. ExoNation, my guest this hour is Dr. Mark Carlotto. He is the author of Before Atlantis. His website is beforeatlantis.com, and Before Atlantis is available on amazon.com. First of all, Mark, thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on an exciting book with some, you know, this is truly amazing, and it's going to be a lot of food for thought for a lot of people. But do you think there are going to be more sites that are going to be found that will be able to be applied to your hypothesis?
I think so. Actually, you know, I at first thought I'd finish the book and then mm-hmm. do something else. And as it turned, and then someone asked me, well, what are you going to do next? And it's like, well, I'm kind of still working on this. What I've actually discovered over the last few weeks is that there's a very interesting site up in Siberia. Over in Siberia, I guess it's up, could be over, depending on how you go, goes back to 700 AD. They think it was constructed. It's called Porbasian. And this is a new site that's not in the book that appears to be aligned to one of the ancient poles. Hmm. And it's a very mysterious site. There was an intensive Russian-led excavation back about 10 years ago. And they excavated about a third of the site. And they still don't really understand why the site was built. It's in a place that's actually built on a permafrost island in the middle of a shallow lake in southern Siberia. There's no evidence that it was occupied for very long. There's very few artifacts there. And it's misaligned. And so, you know, when I see things that are misaligned, it's like, what could that mean? And it turns out that the only alignment that works is a solstice alignment back when the North Pole was in the Norway Sea. So this would put it, you know, back, you know, many tens of thousands of years, far more ancient than is thought to be. But, you know, again, the idea is that the structures that they are excavating now that date back, they're radiocarbon dated, I think, to 700 AD or CE, are just, you know, the latest structures on the site. And then the site was, you know, my contention is that the site would have been or could have been established, you know, many thousands, tens of thousands of years ago. And then over time, other civilizations, you know, co-opted it built over it, maintaining the site, the alignment, and so forth. There's actually a lot of precedent for this. In a lot of the sites in Mexico that I analyze are such that it's not just an isolated structure that's aligned to one of these poles, but it's the whole like pattern of cultivation, all the farmland, everything around it, the roads. They're all pointing in these directions because they're ancient, and people have built, in those directions following, the pre-existing plan. And that's actually an accepted principle in archaeology that civilizations do that. They don't reinvent the wheel. They don't suddenly decide, well, we're going to do something completely different. They kind of, if possible, they go with the flow and they sort of adapt to what's there.
Let me ask you something. With all the archaeological sites that you have investigated on this planet, is there any relation to the archaeological sites and other planets in our solar system?
So, when I was involved with the Mars investigation back in the 80s, the belief was that, those of us that were working the so-called independent Mars investigation, that is the non-NASA scientists, we thought these structures might be, half a million years old, something like that. Whereas NASA was saying that they're, hundreds of millions, billions of years old. It remains to be seen. In a few years, we'll probably get to Mars and we'll be able to check out, these structures, the so-called face on Mars,
right,
and the city and these other structures. There's been numerous structures that have been found. And, if there's some evidence that they're artificial, we'll be able to verify that. And then you have those dates, which are going to be, probably, they're going to be ancient. They're going to be probably in, millions of years. Mm-hmm. But now we'll be able to say, okay, let's try to connect that up with stuff on Earth that's maybe hundreds of thousands of years. So we're getting a little closer. I'm trying to, in a sense, this research bridges the gap. Because right now, we just go back, 3000 BC is sort of when the advanced civilizations on Earth got started, And so that's a long, there's not a lot happening according to the current, paradigms before 3000 BC, from the time we were hunter-gatherers, we became farmers around 10,000 BC, and there's a lot of mystery, on how that happened. And so in pushing back these time frames, we're getting closer, and maybe one day we'll be able to connect it all up. I mean, it is all one equation. I mean, everything's got to add up. That's my belief, my hope.
So, Tommy, do you miss the aerospace industry?
No. There's so much going on. Today was I took a break and I watched the latest SpaceX launch, and it's just amazing what's going on. So much activity, and so much is happening. It's just not enough time in the day.
At the end of your book, you mentioned, I believe that it's pronounced the Nakal. Who were they?
So, the Nakal, I think, might have been Denisovans. I have to think before I say it. It's such a hard word for me to say. The Denisovans are this latest discovery in Siberia. They're sort of a parallel lineage with the Neanderthals that sort of split off from the human evolutionary tree back around half a million years ago. And so in the book, I talk about this worldwide civilization, before Atlantis that existed in all these places. I use a term that some ethnologists back in the 1800s used, and they called these people the Nakal, or the Mayaks. This was Mayanism was a really bad word to use to call these people Mayanists. They believe these are people like Churchward and Augustus Le Plagion and others who, they had reputations, but then when they started studying the Mayan runes, they came up with all sorts of interpretations that were just way outside the box. And so they talk about this people called the Nakal. And I think it's possible if these people were not ETs, were not aliens, mm-hmm. they were an indigenous civilization that evolved on this planet, they could have been Denisovans.
So what's the takeaway from Before Atlantis?
We have a lot of work to do. The takeaway is that there's the further back in time you go, mm-hmm. there's a lot more happening than we thought there was, and that's where the real cool discoveries, the paradigm shifting discoveries are going to be made.
What was the ultimate aha moment that you felt when you were writing Before Atlantis?
So it was back when I, you know, when it occurred to me that these, you know, I was looking at Chichen Itza, mm-hmm. and I realized it was lined up to a different place than Teotihuacan. And I realized it was pointing to, not exactly, but close to where another one of the Hapgood poles was. So when I realized that these poles could be used as a new way of dating these sites that archaeologists cannot date. They look at the alignments and they have no really good explanation for why these sites are lying the way they are. In fact, a lot of the explanations are really convoluted in there. They make your head hurt. Wow. But by aligning them to these ancient poles, which are not proven, these are hypothetical poles, suddenly, like 50 sites in all the sites I looked at in Mexico line up to one of these poles, or line up to a site that lines up to a pole. So it turned out to be a very powerful explanation. And in science, when you come up with a simple explanation that's powerful, that's like an epiphany. It's like, oh my God, what's going on here? And that was sort of my eureka moment. And that happened in, it was like, you know, the $6 Million Man where everything kind of slows down.
Oh yeah, and you had that weird music and away you went.
It was like an infinite amount of time, but it really took place in a few seconds that this realization occurred to me. And it happened quickly, but there was a lot of work to be done after realizing that.
Well, Mark, we have to say so long for tonight. I want to thank you so much for joining us. Continued success, and keep us in the loop on what's going on. We'd love to have you back on. So let our listeners know where they can find out more about you and where they can get a copy of your book.
Yeah, so if you go to beforeatlantis.com, that's the main website, and it's a blog. I haven't done a blog before. I didn't do, blogs didn't exist, I don't think, when I was doing the Mars research. Anyway, it's a great way of updating the research. So, mm-hmm. You know, I'm posting. I try to post something new every week or two, time permitting. And you know, there's a few posts there. One on Machu Picchu. And,
Mark, I've got about 20 seconds. Tell us where we can get your book.
And then if you go to beforeatlantis.com, there's a link to the book from there. You can get it on Amazon. Thanks,
Mark,
Rob.
Take care of yourself, and to you and yours, the very merriest of Christmases.
And to you. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, sir. ExoNation, Mark Carlotto has been our guest this hour. His website is beforeatlantis.com. And I'll be back on the other side of this break as we continue here in the X-Zone from our broadcast center and studios in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. I'm Rob McConnell. Don't go away.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
Laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.